Still lost in a galaxy far, far away, this is the Bennett Brothers podcast for the Star Wars show, The Mandalorian, episode 4, chapter 12, The Siege. And I'm Jerry Bennett.
And I'm Joel Bennett. Thank you for joining us yet again as we talk about The Mandalorian. We're going to spoil the heck out of this latest episode, The Siege. They call it Chapter 12, and the movies are called Episodes. Episode 4, Episode 5. I wonder if that's conscious of them to call it Chapters, and if all of the TV shows are going to be Chapters, all the live action. Who knows? We'll find out at some point
the Clone Wars,
doing more live action television shows.
The Clone Wars episodes are referred to as paragraphs.
Okay, very good. This hieroglyph is number 5. So we're going to talk about this latest episode, and we'll put all the other stuff that we normally talk about will be at the end of the episode, so stay tuned for that. But we're going to dive right into this episode that is directed by Carl Weathers. Apollo himself has directed this episode.
Dylan, you son of a bitch.
That's fantastic. So we're going to talk about this episode. Immediately, I'm going to mention that I was hopeful last podcast, but I knew it was they're going to string this out. We had no Ahsoka this podcast.
Oh, there was never going to be Ahsoka.
But that's okay.
Because the next episode probably will.
Maybe.
This was a 38-minute episode.
Goes by minutes of good time.
It feels like 16 minutes because it's got so much going on. There is no... almost no dead time in this.
Yeah, these
maybe a kid with a cookie is about as slow as it gets.
These episodes have been phenomenal. I loved it. I'm sure you loved it too. Jerry, what'd you think?
It was great. It was. It's hard to describe. It's like each episode is like, well, this is a more action, and they're building in this world, and. You know, it feels weird. It's like, wow, a really good live action Star Wars TV show doesn't normally ever happen in my life. I had to sit through 2 Ewok movies and a Star Wars holiday special, and that was it. That was it.
And they have the look of this feels like Star Wars. The color grading they use on this, everything just feels Star Wars. And the special effects are out of this. They're movie quality special effects. It's. We talked about this last week. Will these special effects hold up? Oh my God, they look great. Yeah. They look great.
Debbie was like, she's like, why can they make more of these shows like in this world? And this was her. She unprompted by me, the attitude of, can they make more of this and like this? And she, her words are this gritty feel, this realism. It's, and I'm like, exactly. That's exactly what it is. And I was running down all the shows that they're actually going to be making, or TV miniseries, if you will. It's just everything. Again, I like the look of the Star Wars sequels, The Force Awakens and Rise of the Skywalker by J.J. Abrams. Both have the really slick camera work and the lens flares and everything. And I think The Last Jedi looks even more beautiful to watch. I mean, it's just visually stunning. And, you know, we can always talk about how the special effects are incredible on all of them. It always comes down to story. It really is. I'm becoming more and more aware that I don't even know if the director is the key thing in these things, because we're always surrounded by talented actors. We're surrounded by talented special effects and everybody in all the departments. And that follows through on all the shows that we've always talked about. All the CW shows always have all of the quality. The actors are great. The stunt coordinators, the special effects, all of that stuff always works, including these Star Wars shows. And even the directors are very important because they're able to do that and they work with good cinematography. It comes down to writing, or the showrunner who's controlling the writing and the story. Because the actors are going to do as good as they're given. And they're going to probably sometimes even step up that. If it's the storyline, though, if the storyline sucks or is written to get somewhere and it's like logic is thrown out the door, then it's no good. That's what the CW shows did. And that's what happens with a lot of terrible shows. And this show is showing like it's all about great writing. That was the problem we also had with the Star Wars sequels, is there's just stupid logical storylines that just... distracted, you know, just took away from the movie. And
well, they had no plan either. They felt like they had no plan. That was one of the problems with the sequel. Here's and this what this also does well, going off of what you said, because there are certain TV shows that have extremely good writing and they're really great shows. For instance, I was just thinking of the Watchmen show. I thought that was, you know, it's a really good story. It's really well written. All great stuff that goes with it.
And it doesn't it's not as visually stunning as this stuff. I'm not talking about special effects.
No, I'm not.
The Watchmen was more practical, straightforward. But like you said, the writing and everything was so good that you're like, I don't care if it doesn't look as artsy fartsy.
And that was a serialized show, so you had to watch every episode. You couldn't just jump in. Versus this show has a obviously a long story, but this is a half hour show basically. This is a, almost a procedural. It's each episode is self-contained. You can come and go on this as you want. If you miss this week's episode, it's not going to be to a detriment. You can probably move on from this story unless
it is designed to tell an adventure from beginning to end.
And that
is part of an overall story structure. But it's yes, you're right. There
and that requires good writing in a different way, because when you have a 13 episodes to tell one long story, you can get into the characters a little bit more. You can get into the minutia of everything. This is 30 minutes. Like, you have to tell a complete story, a three act story in that amount of time, and that's really, it's an art form differently. It's an art form in and of itself, and so I really do appreciate this show for making
I'm disappointed that these episodes are getting shorter, because they teased us at the beginning with the much longer first episode.
I think that was because they wanted to put it in the movie theater.
Yeah.
So, all right, we're going to go in this episode here. We're going to start this episode out with, again, I showed my wife this. She doesn't watch the show, but I'm like, I watched this scene, and I'm like, do you want to see how cute the baby Yoda is? She's like, okay. And I showed her this scene, and it's phenomenal. It is phenomenal. Just the whole wire splicing thing and him trying to talk to the child down the hatch or whatever it is. It was great.
I agree with you. I laughed at heart, but it does boil down to this 50-year-old creature's, what knowledge this creature has, because we have not. Like, for example, we don't see the scene leading up to this where he looks at the child and says, hey, we're communicating. Do you understand me? And the child raises his head, yes or no. We never see any locked in communication at all, other than just, here's the ball, take the ball, take that. No, don't eat that. Those comments. And obviously we've seen that the child has the comprehension of when he knows it's a fight's going to happen, or last episode when it's going to get dropped inside a mouth of a giant creature. It knows how to hit the button on the little device to shut it. And so we didn't see the scene beforehand where he goes, hey, do you think you can crawl in there and pick between the red and the blue? And then the child acknowledges it. And he goes, yeah, I can do this somehow. So it's weird, because when he's talking to him, it looks like the child has no comprehension. It's like they're talking to an 8-month-old.
I will say that for those listening, Jerry saying this child is 50 years old, he has a basis for that, but it's still a complete assumption how old this child is. And I will also add, they have a great line in this scene that I'm really happy to add, and this again goes to good writing, is when Mando goes, well, at least I gave it a try.
Oh yeah,
This wasn't like a crucial thing. This might even, like, he tried other things and he looked at the child and he kept trying other things and he looked at the child and he's like, all right, might as well give it a go. And I like that line.
You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's because we know the child, can walk around, has a cup, holds it to its mouth, drinks, puts it back down. We just see all these scenes where he keeps kind of talking to the child, but we're getting nothing back where I want to feel like, okay, at least I get the child understands this much of a level. And I know it's something we can't really relate to, because if it is 50 years and it's a creature that theoretically lives 900 years, it is a different structure than what we have as far as development.
This scene sort of answers your question, though. The child does not understand the basic concepts of,
But he knew to get those two cords. He knew how to pull them out. He knew the red and blue, and he was looking at them. And obviously, I think
we don't know. You're right. We don't know how much time beforehand was saying, like, pick up the wire, pick up the wire. That could have been.
Yes. Yeah. What is a wire? Do you know what a wire is? And obviously, you can say the reason he put those two cords together is because he's also like, I wonder what these do, because I'm curious. You know, that's fine. I get, he doesn't have to say that. I can accept that by the motion there. It's just, I don't think they realize, like, there's no way we can get him in this situation that is actually a way we can actually tell, oh, that's how he got that far. And then the kid started ignoring him.
Yeah, and I will say, when he was talking to the kid, he had moments where he was going, where he was, you know, he's like, don't touch the two ends. They're oppositely charged, and they were, or whatever it was. And it's like, you're using words that just don't make no sense to the child, I'm assuming.
Well, and it's almost like when you talk to people, you can train a dog. No, put that down, out of your mouth. You know, the creatures get that. And that's what he's, that's his communication level to a certain degree has been with the child. This whole point is just, you know, so but I know we're going on and on about one small point, though, but I just want to talk about it.
Change this a little bit, though. One of my favorite parts about this opening scene is when they're sitting down and drinking. They both drink at the same time.
Yes, he's admiring.
And I really like that, because it shows there's not just the verbal connection that they're trying to establish. There is a parental or a...
Oh, he admires him and everything, yeah.
A connection between the two of them on a different level. And so there is something about the tone of someone's voice or what they're saying that you can try to gleam off of. Like, it's like be us talking to someone in a different language. Depending on how they emote in their language, we can try to figure out what they're trying to say very rudimentally. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot going on in there. But yes, we have talked about this a lot. So I just thought it was a great
scene. How about this? You know, at the end of this season, or at the end of the series, whenever the child goes on to wherever he's going to go on, do you see at the end of it, it's like, you know, Din's going to be like, goodbye. And the child's going to look at him. He's going to go, goodbye. You know, he's going to throw that out. We're like, oh, he could talk the whole time.
He's going to be, bye, good.
You know, but you know what I mean, though? It has that feeling. Did you watch the Primal animated series?
No.
There's a moment in the very last episode that does that, where you think this one character cannot speak and has not spoken for the entire show. And then the very last frame, he says a word and we're like, oh my God, he can talk. You know,
that just spoiled the end of that show.
I don't care. That's not the end of the show. That's not the end of the show. The show's going on for years. This is just the end of it's a moment.
End of the season.
Yes. And it's not, oh, shut up. They were dead the whole time. Murder on the Express, everybody.
Wow.
It was a sled.
Okay, we're going to move on. So we're going to go to Navarro because he's going to need help fixing his ship.
Well, first of all, we get to see him drinking under his helmet.
Yeah, he lifts his helmet up to drink.
We haven't seen that since
had a question about that. Well, does he have a straw?
Well, he's also, you know, does he? It's like, I guess he looks at the child as not an animal or a droid, so he keeps him covered there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they go to the planet Dave Navarro. We see the missing mythosaur. Is it a mythosaur symbol? Was that what it was called, mythosaur?
I don't remember.
It was a symbol that he has on his arm now.
Yes. I don't remember what it was called, though.
If it was mythosaur, it's weird because we also have a character here called Mithril showing up.
Yeah.
It's too many of the same
words.
Which
is also a metal, an armor from Lord of the Rings. So yes. I don't know what's going on.
So the walrus men are fighting the marshal.
Yes. The marshal, Cara Dune, she's back as a marshal. Basically has a nice little fight scene here, although I did have a moment there where they stopped firing their guns, and I was like, why'd they stop firing their guns? They were firing with impunity before, and now they're just like, and we're going to stop. But it was a good fight all around. She saves a lava meerkat, which we had seen previously, which is one of the ugliest puppets I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good fight. And then we get Greef and Kara. They're waiting for Din to land in his beat-up...
Razor Crest.
Razor Crest, thank you.
Everybody is so happy here, and I'm not sure I like all the smiling. It's too... It's like, yeah, we did it, everybody, yeah. And it's... I mean, I know I'm picking at it, but it's like everything was so dark before that it stands out to me in this episode. The two or three times we actually see everybody like, yeah! And it's like, stop it. You know, it got how much time has passed since season one to season two? I mean, because this city has done, building the school that we're going to see in a second and all this stuff. There's like major developments on this planet, and how long was he gone? Because that was like at the end of last season that all that, mm-hmm. Changed. So I don't know, just question.
We see one of Greef's technicians that is going to work on the ship is a little shady. He does that look back, and then the music kind of changes to a minor key, and uh-oh, what's going on there?
This creature is actually, it looks similar to that Sith bounty hunter, the one who killed Rey's parents in Rise of the Skywalker, but it's not. It's a different creature. Fact, it's called. It looks similar. The character in that movie was called. His name was Ochi. But this mechanic here is actually Mimbanese, M-I-M-B-A-N-E-S-E, Mimbanese, which is a race that was introduced in Solo, a Star Wars story.
All right.
So important. So important.
So they're going to go enter, like Jerry said, they're going to go enter the old cantina, which is now a schoolhouse. And I didn't notice this on the first watch, and I had to read this someplace else, but if you notice in the background, there is an IG statue.
IG-11 tribute statue, yeah.
Tribute statue that was built. Yeah, and it's such in the background. If you weren't paying attention, or if someone didn't point it out to you, you would never know it's there. So it's interesting that they even decided to have that in there. So they go into this classroom, which is all humans. There's no alien species in there that I could notice. Yes, they're all alien species.
There's a girl with Rey's hairstyle.
Oh, was there?
Yeah, so people are like, oh, it's from the Force Awakens hairstyle.
But the Baby Yoda is the only one that is not a humanoid sort of creature that is in there. The students are being taught by a droid. Protocol droid.
The actor who plays the droid is, that guy has actually, he played the Zero robot the first season. He's played two other robot roles, and he's played C-3PO several times on personal appearances and other shows and stuff, like on the Academy Awards, needed C-3PO to walk around. So he's done that role a lot.
He walked around, but he's not the voice.
No, there was a woman who did the voice.
A woman did the voice, and I don't have her name in front of me, but she did a good job. So shout out to her. So she's talking about how Coruscant is no longer the center of the galaxy, the governmental center of the galaxy. It's actually Chandrila now, which is the home of Mon Mothma.
But we also know that the center of the galaxy, the capital, changes every so many years. And that's why the planet that gets destroyed in Force Awakens, spoiler alert, that's when it was the home there. But they keep rotating the planet around, or rotating the capital every so many years.
Fun fact, Chandrila is actually where Han and Leia, and I believe at this point, infant Ben are actually living.
I thought you said it was a fun fact.
That's fun. It's a fun fact. It ties in. It's, you know, infant Ben. He's a baby. And Baby Yoda, you know, there's all these babies. And this is a cute little scene where the child, with its insatiable hunger, wants the other kids' Girl Scout cookies.
Yogurt-covered cookies.
Yeah, well, if you notice the pictures at the end, when they do the artwork at the end, the artwork actually has them as brown cookies, but they've obviously changed the color of them to make them look alien and a little more colorful.
Well, so that when he throws them up later, you can see it.
And so that's where the child is going to be left while our team has their adventure. Speaking of team, we get reintroduced to, as Jerry mentioned earlier, Mithril, who was frozen in carbonite in episode 1, season 1, right in the beginning. He's a bounty.
Played by Horatio Sands from Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
That scene when he sees Mandalorian come in and the gas shoots out of his neck.
Yeah, oh, very so funny.
That sound when the gas comes out, it's the same, like, goes It's actually the same sound as either like the lightsaber remote from Star Wars A New Hope or like a door opening up. It was just like that's the exact same sound effect.
it was very funny. So he's working off his debt to Greef.
350 years.
350 years. We don't know how long that species lives, so it could be.
And what's a year? Like the planet's rotation around.
Well,
is it a universal time frame, basically? Well,
the way they do it in Star Wars, at least in like when they're referencing stuff, it's ABY, after Battle of Yavin and before Battle of Yavin, and then they do years based off of that. Now, I'm not sure how they do a year, but that's how they...
Oh, they do that based on us. It's just us, yeah.
Yes. So they're going to be going to an Imperial base that has been... There's just a skeleton
crew. How far away is this base? Because we get a picture of the planet. Is this planet really tiny?
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's that far away at all, because we actually get to see the speeder get
from... It's jetpackable.
Yeah. We see the speeder, the Marauder, get from there to the town, pretty much.
Yeah, and also we but it's like supposedly on the other side of the green zone, and that image they're looking at, it starts rounding out. So I don't know, is that like the other side of the planet? You know, it's strange. I'm just curious.
So they're going to go to this Imperial base. They have a speeder that they're riding in. Mithril's driving. It's Mithril's speeder. He's wearing his humidity vest. Do you ever wear your humidity vest, Jerry?
Not for years.
Oh, yeah. It's outdated. So they're going through the lava flats, which I thought this was an interesting concept, because when they get to the door and the door is burnt out, melted, and the idea that like when the lava tides come in, the lava flows through these crevices. So it's like an ocean planet, only it's a lava planet, mm-hmm. Very much like...
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
No, I do. I want to hear you say it.
I don't know if I can't think of it off my... Mustafar. So they get there, they're going to go, and instead of trying to get through the door, which they try to, he flies up to the top platform where the actual base is at, and he's Mando, and he's able to let him in.
Can you imagine if, like, he, instead of doing that, like, let's say the place they got to go to make this all happen had, like, a giant hole in the top that he could just flown into that, gone down the shaft?
Oh, yeah, just flown down, done it, and then flown back out?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd have been nice and easy.
Yeah. Why didn't he do that?
Because he has other stuff he has to do for the plot.
Yeah. Well, he also didn't know where it was. They had to go inside and find it.
Yes.
But yeah.
So they get on this landing platform, and there's a it's a mint version of a where did I have that?
It's a mid truckster marauder. I got written down here a mid truckster marauder.
It's a mint. No, it's mint.
Mint.
As in, it's in perfect condition. Trexel Marauder. I put on closed captioning for myself just to make sure.
The front of it looks like the Imperial troop transporter.
Yes. So they get in. They enter into the base through the hangar door. We actually get to see again. I didn't notice this the first time watching it, but I did the second time. There's lines of speeder bikes, up and down, which is going to come into play later. So they're walking around the base. They get to the shaft, which is where.
Shut your mouth.
Yeah, I'm talking about the shaft.
Oh, okay, dude.
Where the Mithril is going to drain the coolant, and that's going to set off a reaction where the lava is going to rise, and it's going to explode in the entire base. He walks out onto the pedestal, and Jerry, there's no guardrails on this pedestal.
Very funny.
There's no guardrails.
I'm afraid of heights and lava.
And dying.
Yeah, I like that they're using those little cold cylinders. It's a low-tech, high-tech thing that, you know, we saw Grand Moff Tarkin had him in his pocket like a pen, but it's interesting because, you know, we're dealing with 70s idea technology, but supposed to be futuristic, in the past.
A long time ago.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay.
But it's also like those ports are usually where like R2-D2 would plug into.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was really brilliant. I didn't know that Grand Moff Tarkin used them.
Well, he had them in his pocket all the time. Things power down.
Let me ask you a question. Nice. Well done. Did you fear for Mithril numerous times throughout this episode?
Constantly.
Yeah, they did a really good job of making his character seem like it was an expendable character.
But he wasn't so... Like, a lot of times when you do this, the characters are so one-dimensional, wishy-washy. Let's get out of here. And I thought they were going to do that with him, but they round him out. Like, as it goes on, he has a gun, which is like, oh my God, he has a gun. And he's shooting, and he's not a terrible shot. I was very happy that the character was more well-rounded than I had any mm-hmm. right to be.
So they're going to escape now. They're going to leave. And as they leaving, I would have never noticed this. So there's people who comb these episodes really quickly too. And like, it's just amazing. I didn't see it. I saw it in a video clip. Did you see the crew member behind the side?
Yeah.
Have you seen the toy that they didn't make the toy, but someone actually made a toy like with casing and all that kind of stuff.
That's the crew member.
Very funny. So if you don't know what we're talking about, in one of the scenes...
There's a still out there. It's very easy to see. It's a still that has Greef Karga, Cara Dune, and the Mandalorian all firing, and off to the left-hand side, there's a guy just hanging out in the back.
Guy in a white, like a shirt,
am I out of the shot? All right, go ahead.
A t-shirt and jeans. So
I got to watch for some reason, because most people have their time on their phone, but that's okay.
So that's really funny. So they're busting into this place, and we get to see some... Imperial troopers, so Imperial officers kind of people.
Doctors, actually.
Yeah, purging drives. They start to purge some of the drives because they know the base is coming down, so they're shooting it, trying to get rid of it. Jerry, what's special about them?
Well, they have on their arms the same insignia that we saw in the Doctor from the last season, which also matched up the insignia that we saw on the clones from Kamino way back in episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
Dr. Pershing.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like... Cause so they go in there, they kill these officers, these troopers, and then they look over, and then there's like tanks,
mm-hmm.
Batha tanks, where... I don't know if they're Batha tanks, but
we see Alien Ripley clones from Alien Resurrection are all in them.
Fantastic. Fantastic. There's some biological mass in them, and they're trying... It looks like they're trying to clone Jedi or the
Force
Emperor, maybe?
Force-sensitive clones. Clones... The Star Wars universe established that clones cannot wield the Force. That's something that they've established when they had... I'm not sure when they did that, but apparently they did. And it became an issue when people talked about how the Emperor, and for that matter, Snoke, who are both called clones, can move yield the Force. And so there's a lot of speculation that this is going to help answer that sloppy question from the sequel movies.
And I think that's what they're leaning towards is how to clone for people like Snoke and the Emperor.
Once they're actually getting close to the tanks and looking at them, they are playing the Snoke music from The Force Awakens, that track of Snoke music that John Williams wrote. So there's another thing right there. They're actually using the music. It's called Snoke.
So Mithril goes to the computer, tries to save stuff, and pulls up a hologram of Dr. Pershing. And he talks about the child, basically. And we get mentioned here that the child has a high M count.
It's a nice way of not saying the midichlorian word. People hate the midichlorians.
I'm going to say something here.
Don't do it, man. Because we've never talked about it.
But like, this has always been one of the... like, people say this is a big beef of the prequels and the idea of midichlorian counts. Maybe I just jumped on that bandwagon, but it really, if I think about it, never bothered me in any way, shape, or form. Does it bother you? And why?
I really wasn't worried about it. I never thought about it one way or the other. It's like, the Force is magic. They try to put a little science behind it. I don't care.
It's still magic.
Yeah, I don't have any skin in that game, really.
Me neither, and I think a lot of people don't have skin in the game, and I think it just became this sort of like, oh, midichlorians are so stupid. Why? Because it's science-y. Why? That's where it like dies. Like, what? I mean, I guess there are some arguments if you wanted to make that, but like, that never bothered me. So if it bothered you out there, if midichlorians, if them mentioning M counts and that sort of idea really bothers you and you hate this episode because of it, because you hate the prequels because of it, let us know.
That's not why I hated the prequels.
No, but if you have a problem with midichlorians, let me know. I'd be curious to hear people's arguments.
I'll hate it if they find out that the M count actually stands for the word Misa.
Misa count.
Because then that's what I'd have a problem with. In the holographic from the Doctor, which we find out is only 3 days old, which is also in the sequence where all of our major characters find out that Moff Gideon is still alive, which is a big deal. The Doctor talks about how just taking the midichlorians that he did from the child already almost killed it. And they make the comment about how it's something for, quote unquote, the volunteer. It might kill the volunteer or whatever. And I'm not sure if that volunteer is just talking about any one of those clones or if that's somebody else at this point we're not knowing about.
Good question. So they find out, yeah, Moff Gideon's alive and Din is going to go back and
get the kid. He jetpacks back to get the kid.
Oh, yes, the kid.
And I made the comment because I know you had talked about this. Is like, boy, those stormtroopers are terrible shots, except for when you're wearing armor that can take a hit.
They hit him every time. All the time. It's so obvious. This is, we have a line. I don't know if they just used the dialogue from the previous movies, but there they are. Blast them.
There was several lines that were, the voices sounded similar, let alone all of the different phrases that were very similar. Mm-hmm. We think they're on two levels. It's broken up. You know, that kind of stuff was great. Also, I did notice
TK
here.
TK421. Why aren't you?
Yes.
That's not it's not TK421, is it?
I don't think so, no. But another thing that's different here than the new sequels is the First Order, especially in Rise of Skywalker, they went out of their way to have at least 50% of all the First Order troopers, when you're hearing their voices, there's at least 50% female. There's no females in this version here at all. I don't know if they've gotten the message that they're supposed to have more females in there or what, or maybe they'll redub it once they take the guy out who's in the corner shot, you know, the guy with the watch.
These are all clones, Jerry.
No, clones. No, it's past that clone time.
So our team here of Grief, Kara and Mithril, they take off. They're going to use the Marauder to escape.
Before we go there, when Mandalorian was in the heat shaft and he flew out, he left two stormtroopers behind who were at the controls there. Mm-hmm. And then we never see those guys again. Did they not do anything? Could they not turn that back on? Was there any dialogue that says once this starts, it can't be done again?
No, there was no dialogue, and that's a good question if there was supposed to be more there, but the base exploded, so that explains to me that they weren't able to stop it.
Mm-hmm. But you were talking about when they jump over the cliff in that vehicle. Yeah, that scream that did when they were falling was really funny.
Yeah, so this vehicle, they go forward, they go back, they jump off there.
They crush his speeder.
And then the coolest shot in the whole episode.
That they put in the trailer, too.
Yeah, the speed. I don't watch the trailers for this show, so I was not ready for this. They're having the speeder bikes all jump out and then fly down the mountain the way they do. And not only just fly down the mountain, two of them like kind of just don't make it.
Oh, yeah.
It's awesome. Like
You didn't see the trailer that came out at the beginning of the season.
Oh, the trailer. It was in the trailer in the beginning of the season?
Yeah, they don't do trailers for episodes.
Oh. Well, they do next time on.
No, they don't. They've never done that on this show. Yeah, they don't. No, there's none of that. There's no scene from the next episode.
What TV show?
You're thinking of Star Trek Discovery.
Discovery does do that, doesn't it? Yes. Oh, okay. Well, I did see the trailer for this season.
Yes, we saw those speeder bikes going over the edge. It looked really cool, and we saw that. I remembered it anyways. You notice that they get all the speeder bikes. It's like, do you think any of the stormtroopers are like, quick, take off the armor and go put on the scout troopers? Well, it's the whole outfit, yeah. Because
they're just sitting just like around, the TIE fighter like, pilot.
The TIE fighter guys are like, you either have to have separate. Like, there's one guy's like, I got three sets of armor, or they've got people specifically for each one of those.
So you're right. So Grief is going to man the gun, which is in the back, which is on a turret. And then they have a nice little, this is a great chase scene here.
It's really good.
Where they're shooting the speeders and they come on board and he shoots the speeder off and all good stuff. And then four TIE fighters.
Just like in The New Hope.
They come and then.
Here they come.
Yes. Good stuff. I like this moment here where they're running, they're flying away from the TIE fighters and Grief's like, can't you make this thing go faster? I would have been like, can't you just stop this and watch them fly past us? Like, just, and they just, because I don't think TIE fighters can just stop and just hover. Maybe they can. And then right as they're getting to the flats where it's all open and they're almost to the city, it looks like the three remaining TIE fighters coming to bear down, and then in flies the Razor Crest and does its thing.
Do we get the cutest child thing ever at this point when he's throwing his little hands in the air because he's so excited? It's like, he's like, yeah. It's like,
he's
all
got
right.
The cookies in one hand and he's raising his hand like a roller coaster, and then it's adorable. I mean, it's gross, but it's adorable that he throws up because it's such a child thing to do. Like, yeah, this is fun.
We do get to cut back down to our other heroes, and they're all throwing their hands and we did it. They're cheering, and again, I'm just like, a little too much, a little too happy.
I enjoy this moment here. So he's got his Razor Crest. He's not going to leave. He's not going to land. Din is going to leave. But I like this moment here when he's talking to Grief. He's flying the ship and he's trying to wipe the baby's face off. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got to clean the baby off. Like, but he's doing it all. It's very much a dad thing. It was very. It's a little thing that they did, and I think it was really well done to show, he's a father to this child.
Agreed.
So Din leaves on the planet. Carson Teva, he is questioning, because Carson Teva is the X-Wing pilot we have seen
in Blue Squadron, mind you.
He is questioning Grief.
Gives him no help.
So basically, the X-Wing pilots now are just kind of like local PD, and they have to go in and question people.
And they clearly went and looked at the base, too, what was left of it, probably.
Yes.
But nothing was there.
So he questions him, Grief, kind of like, no, nothing happened. I don't know what you're talking about. And then he walks outside, and then he talks with Kara, and we get a little bit of history on Kara now. That she is from Alderaan.
We knew that, though.
We find out that she has lost everyone when Alderaan exploded. We found out that she's actually a cousin to Leia, which I thought was really interesting.
What are you talking about?
No, I'm just kidding.
Nice.
There was a second where you were like, really?
No.
Well, if they're both from Alderaan, they went to school together. Who knows?
No, she was, they had a conversation. That's where she also calls the pilot Blue, which I'm assuming is from Blue Squadron. I don't know why she was, I'm not a joiner Blue. And then he makes a comment, there's something going on out here. Translation, the First Order, maybe, or something like that.
Or just the New Republic. Or not the New Republic, just the remnants of the Empire.
Yeah. Did you know the line when he asked me, did you lose anyone? I go, as soon as he goes, he loses anyone, I go, I lost everyone. Like, that's there's no other way.
No, one person survived. They were on a rock and it shot out.
So he leaves her a New Republic marker.
Is that what that is?
That's what I wrote down.
What's a marker? I don't even
know. I don't know. It's something. Maybe it's a communication device. Maybe it's, I don't know what it is. But there is talk of her getting a spinoff series.
Well, that's my, I mean, are we done seeing these two this season, or are we going to get to see them again? I mean, I thought this season they would play a more prominent role. But it looks like it's just another one and done kind of.
Which, no, they'll show a book up back at the end, just how the Ugnaught character, Nick Nolte voiced, kind of popped back up later in the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, there's no guarantee. Like, he has to go back to the planet. No,
IG-11 came back on the show, for goodness sakes.
But yeah, they don't know where he's going, so he's going to have to come back to this planet, or they're going to have to meet up at a rebel base or something.
So at this point, I'm thinking, well, that's the end of the episode. No. Because I knew it's a short episode.
And you would be wrong, Jerry. We get to see, in a very similar shot to the Star Wars A New Hope, we get to see in a Quinton's class command cruiser coming into frame.
It's an overhead shot, very similar, yeah.
And then we cut inside this Imperial spaceship, and there is we find out that the shady tech that was working for Greef put a homing device on the Razor Crest. You had mentioned that there was no female stormtroopers, but here is a female Imperial officer, which I think we've seen female Imperial officers before, but I can't quite remember.
I don't know if we've seen them in Star Wars. I know we see them obviously all over the place in the new sequels, but
Clone Wars, didn't we have them in Clone Wars as well?
Probably. Well, there was the magistrate who was on the Rebels, was a major one. Her name's escaping me. And this actress here, she was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh,
I'm shocked that you don't know.
I did not know that. That's
She was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this last season. I read an article very briefly about it, but yes, she's got a connection there.
Wow, she played Lady Sif? That's amazing.
Yes.
So then female Imperial officer goes and tells Gideon, we get to see Moff Gideon, about the asset is still with the Mandalorian and they have the homing device on. Why is Gideon wear Darth Vader armor?
Looks cool. Well, you know, it's the same black armor look that the TIE fighter pilots wear, and the guy who, the big under helmet who like always grabs up something and pulls it down when they go right before the giant laser shoots. It's similar armor.
I gave you the second part of that.
It sure
could
is.
Be the reason why. It just looks like it's very similar to Darth Vader.
So what's he looking at here in this room?
He is looking at two rows of what appear to be dark troopers.
What are dark troopers?
Well, dark troopers are from the video game Star Wars Shadows. No, it's not Shadows of the Empire. What is
dark
the name?
Dark Forces?
Dark Forces.
What is a video game?
So this is a game I've played and beaten back in the day. It was a fantastic
Star Wars game. I like how you said you beat it. Like you had to like just... And I beat it, by the way, everybody.
Oh, no.
If you watch my reaction video from 1996, you'd have to look at a VHS tape I made of myself, yes.
Which is totally understandable if you do. I mean, that's what I would do, too. Star Wars Dark Forces. That's the name of the game. Knew it.
Yeah, that's what we said.
Yes. Sorry, I was just clarifying that. It came out in 1995. So we see some Dark Troopers. Now, I know... you have a theory that you want to share with the general public, people listening.
Okay, we're seeing these robots. Essentially, they're robots. They're the BAT troopers, the Bat troopers from G.I. Joe. We're seeing these, and we know that these things, we don't see them in the sequel trilogy at all. We just see First Order troopers. So this is not something that's bridging a gap to the sequels, like some of the other things we saw earlier with the clones. So my question is, well, where are these coming from? Why are they coming from? But we know, or we think we know, that we're going to be seeing Ahsoka Tano, a Jedi, relatively soon. In fact, if you know what the title of the next episode is, I won't say it, but it really lends towards that route. When you have people who have blades as their primary weapon, you get into R-rated territory really fast if they start using those on other humans, because they're taking off limbs, they're cutting into people. It's really it takes the rating level. It's hard to do. So they came through, you know, very smartly. So when George Lucas did the prequels, he's like, we need robots so our heroes can cut up robots and nobody cares. And even in Attack of the Clones, we're like, that bug race, nobody cares if you cut up bugs because they're bugs. It's gross.
Until there's a decapitation that they need to do from a human.
One, or, yeah, you pick and choose that. You do not have, you know, there's a lot of limbs flying in the Star Wars movies in overall, but not a lot per capita in any one movie. And so I believe, this is my guess, that these droids are all being put together because they've thought this through and they said, hey, Disney Plus is a show that pushes the line, but we cannot push that line too much and just be a bunch of samurais cutting up people. So I think that's why they did it, or are doing it. And you agree.
No, I definitely agree. I'll be honest, when I remember playing the game, never thinking that these were droids. So when you were like, these droids, and all, I'm like, oh, Dark Troopers are droids. I didn't know that. Okay, well, there you go. So,
if they are. I mean, this is all speculation, but it's logical speculation. Logicization.
So that's a big tease for hopefully later in the season.
I think we are going to find out, though, that Moff Gideon is Leia's cousin. I believe you're right about that.
No, that sounds about right.
Mm-hmm. Great episode.
He's a Moff, not a Grand Moff. So why is he wearing that outfit? Does he work for Thrawn? What's going on here?
Excellent episode. As always, the show keeps going forward, and I'm excited to see where this is going to go next. Love this episode. Picked at a few parts here and there, but they were nothing in this that the picking apart takes it down a bad path. It was still great. Loved it. You loved it.
We all loved it too. I think it was a great episode. We'd love to know your thoughts. Go to facebook.com/Bennett Brothers Podcast. Send us a tweet at Bennett Bros Pod, or hit us up on email, BennettBrothersPodcast@gmail.com. Hey, one more thing. Go to patreon.com/BennettBrothersPodcast. We just posted a new one relatively recently that you can, a mini cast that you can go listen to if you're a patron member. So go do that.
Hidden gems and TVs that you didn't know. Part two, really.
Part two, yeah. So go take a look at that, especially if you're looking for another TV show to watch that you may have missed and want to explore something that we think was actually pretty good. So
Ed Pierce wanted to know if we were going to have the two Ronnies on there. And I said, no, that wasn't going to happen. Because that's not a hidden gem. Everybody should know that gem.
Well, there you go. So that is our review of this Chapter 12 episode. Again, let us know what you think.
Yeah. And one news that we never talked about is they've announced that Wonder Woman 1984 will be coming out on HBO Max for 1 month. So we'll watch that and review it before it eventually goes back to the theaters. And then goes through the whole process, and then eventually shows back up on HBO Max again. But yeah, so that's coming out. And eventually on DVD, Blu-ray, the New Mutants will be out soon. I've already seen it, but Joel will see it, so that way maybe we can actually talk about it.
And that way you don't have to see it out there. You can just listen to our podcast.
Oh, it's worth seeing. I thought it was okay.
Awesome.
All right, guys. I'm Jerry.
I'm Joel. We'll talk to you next time.